Welcome to the Winter Palace. I'm your host, Mark Cole, editor and publisher of Odessa Steps magazine. Today we have the return of Jeff Merrick from Rogers Sportsnet to talk about the Gordie Howe funeral, the NHL draft coming up tomorrow, and some odds and ends. Following that, some quick recommendations from the world of popular culture. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the show. I was down on the ground when the messenger brought me a letter. Welcome back to the Winter Palace. We catch our next guest on his way to his next assignment, which he's always on the go. On his way to Buffalo for the NHL draft is our friend Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet and the MVSW podcast to talk about the comings and goings in the world of hockey in the last few days and weeks. How's it going, Jeff?
I'm good, Mark. Why do you always seem to catch me when I'm in the car going somewhere? Like, I swear, Mark, I'm really not this important. It only seems that you catch me when it sounds like I'm going somewhere important and doing something important. I assure you, I am generally a very, very boring person.
The first thing I wanted to talk about is you covered or went to the Gordie Howe funeral last week. As a Red Wings fan, I am curious to hear your take about how that all went. I mean, I know it was on TV, so we could watch it, but what was it like there in person?
You know, it was the who's who of hockey. It was, you know, the further closing of a chapter of a certain era of hockey. You know, John Beliveau passed away a couple of years ago, and Gordie Howe passes away this year. You know, players from that generation. Glenn Hall is still with us. Johnny Bauer is still with us. Ted Lindsay is still with us. Red Kelly is still with us. Pete Mahava, Frank Mahovlich is still with us. But more Sam Mikita, although he's going through his various health issues as well, still with us. But, you know, that era of hockey players whose, you know, sweet spots were in the late 40s and through the 50s and into the early 60s, those players we're starting to lose them. And Gordie, you could argue, alongside Jean Beliveau, two of the biggest names in the history of the game. So it really was, and it felt this way, like it was, you know, a further closing of a chapter of hockey. And there are some players, you know, that sort of helped to define their era and define a certain position. And Gordie Howe was clearly one of those players, and by any measuring stick, one of the greatest players to ever play the game.
I noticed that a lot of people have finally caught on to the stat in Gordie's passing that Gordie Howe did not really have that many Gordie Howe hat tricks.
No. Two, and although there may be three now, it's funny because I started this with Paul Patsko from the Society for International Hockey Research in 2005 during the lockouts. We were just reading, you know, Red Wings game sheets and trying to piece together. Paul did all the legwork on it, trying to find out how many Gordie Howe hat tricks Gordie actually had. We came up with two. There may be a third in the Detroit, California Seals game in the 67-68 season, but still not able to confirm that. But yeah, to your point, it wasn't as if, you know, he was in Brendan Shanahan, you know, Jerome Iginla, Rick Tocchet range of, you know, 18, 19, or 20 of these in his career. Documented, we have two. And there's an outside chance that he may have three. Only 22 career fights as well. None in the WHA that have been documented at all. So much of that, I don't want to say it was a myth, but a lot of that was a creation that he was someone that had, you know, a dozen fights on his dance card every year. He never did. It doesn't make him less of a hockey player, but in pursuit of the truth, Gordie Howe was never someone that had 150 fights in his career. He had in the early 20s and never had a ton of Gordie Howe hat tricks. He had two, maybe at the outset, three of them.
But I know I heard someone tell a story, it may have been you, that even though he did not have many fights, some of them were fairly, I guess we could say, brutal. Didn't he, like...
Yep.
Yeah, wasn't there one where he... Yeah, wasn't there one where he basically sort of, I don't know, flattened the guy's nose and sort of really messed up his face?
Lou Fontanato. And the story of that is the media around it, and the media around that fight was still pictures. And so we saw, you know, we have firsthand accounts from players that were there when it happened, and they'll tell you it was more of a 50-50 fight than the pictures lead you to believe, because as the pictures will show you, Lou Frontinato, then of the New York Rangers from Guelph, Ontario, you know, his nose was all the way across the other side of his face. You know, just Google Lou Frontinato plus Gordie Howe fight, and you'll see, you know, pictures of Lou Frontinato immediately afterwards. Now, the way the fight went down, it was a fight behind the net. Detroit Red Wings playing the New York Rangers. Lou skated in. Gordie was roughing someone else. The name escapes me right now. Lou came in to fight Gordie, and Gordie met him with a fist. And that's the one that rearranged his face. And after Lou shook off the cobwebs, they both started swinging at each other. And if you only look at the picture, you know, you say to yourself, wow, holy smokes, looks like, you know, Gordie Howe really mangled Lou Fontanato. And he did with that one punch. But the entire fight itself was a lot closer from the people that were there for a firsthand account than it is actually believed. Much in the same way that John Ferguson-Bobby Hull fight. And thankfully, video has appeared of it since. But for the longest time, we were all left with that, you know, that picture of a bloody Bobby Hull. And we all thought, you know, John Ferguson, you know, just destroyed Bobby Hull in a fight. Not true. Hull's nose was already split open from, I think it was a high stick earlier on. Ferguson did catch him with a punch, opened him up. That's why the carnage looks like it was inflicted by Ferguson. Bobby Hull very much got the better of the Ferguson-Hull fight. But because the only media around it for the longest time were still pictures, all you saw was what Bobby looked like afterwards. And we all assumed that John Ferguson won the fight. Not exactly true.
Last night, as we tape, were the NHL awards in Vegas. Were there any surprises among the winners? It seemed to be sort of what everybody kind of had predicted.
Yeah, no real surprises. I think the only surprises were who was left off certain ballots, and one sort of who was on a certain ballot, and that's Francois Beauchemin, and, you know, and part of someone's ballot for the Norris Trophy. But, you know, we had, you know, people file ballots that didn't have Erik Karlsson on in their top five at all. And so, you know, I've been banging this drum a while. As much as, Mark, we hear people from the Professional Hockey Writers Association bemoaning the secrecy around the Hockey Hall of Fame election committee and how they select players and demanding more transparency, I would argue the time is here right now for there to be transparency in how these people, the professional hockey writers, vote. Because it looks to me as if there are a lot of people in that association who don't follow the game as closely as they should, considering they're the one that are voting on trophies, where you're judging players in not just one market, but 30 markets. I think we saw it again last night, Margaret. I think the time is here right now for the hockey writers to finally say, okay, time for full transparency. Once it's all done, everyone's ballot is released to the public, and you can judge from there. And if any writers have to have a problem with that, they can withdraw from voting altogether.
I thought it was interesting that I heard one prominent sports writer say he doesn't vote anymore because he lives in Toronto and doesn't see enough of the Western Conference, and says doesn't feel like he has a full grasp of all the candidates, so he doesn't vote anymore.
Good for that person. Good for them. I think it should be more of that. And this isn't a knock on them per se. It's more of a, you know, the reality of their business. But I don't know why local beat writers get a chance to vote on these awards. Like, if you're a beat writer for the Philadelphia Flyers, do you really pay that much attention to how good Hampus Lindholm is in Anaheim? Like, really? If you're 24/7 in Philadelphia and that's all you're chasing all day, every day, how much of the Los Angeles Kings can you watch? And conversely, you know, if you're the Dallas Stars beat writer, you know, how much, I mean, Montreal games can you watch? How much Montreal action can you follow? I think when it comes to awards like this, the beat writers, with all due respect, and I know they're encouraged to watch all of it, but covering a team right now is a 24/7 business. I'm of the opinion strongly, strongly, that local beat writers should not be able to vote for national awards.
Great. You're on your way to Buffalo for the NHL draft. I assume Austin Matthews will still safely go number one to Toronto. There's been
yep.
no
No rumors going around about trades or anything like that?
Nope, zero. I know there was that stuff about Arizona trying to trade. Not going to happen. Not a chance, not a thought. Toronto Maple Leafs on Friday night will select Austin Matthews first overall.
We've seen a couple trades in the last few days. Do you think there will be any action at the draft?
If the chatter is any indication, yeah. You know, most recently, and you know, I just saw on Hockey Central New with Nick Kiprios, and he was talking about the Winnipeg Jets, and do they actually covet Patrick Laine at number two, or are they willing to, A, move down, or, B, take someone else instead of Patrick Laine? So, where once upon a time we thought there was the big three, and then you had to start thinking, now maybe there's only the big one. And then the really big decision is, what does Winnipeg do? Trade the pick so someone else can take Patrick Laine, or keep the pick but not take Patrick Laine, or three, I guess, take Patrick Laine. So that's where we're at right now with the draft. The curiosity now starts at number two, because it's not exactly a lock 100%. They still may take him, but it's not a lock right now. The Winnipeg Jets go with Patrick Laine.
And are you guys still doing a podcast meetup show tonight?
Won't be a podcast meetup show. We weren't able to pull it together technically. I know that shocks you, Mark, that we have tech issues with this podcast, given that you're someone who's listened to it for a long time and contribute in a significant way to it. But we will be doing a meetup tonight. But our podcast will have to wait until after the draft. I think we're doing that at the Media Center in Buffalo.
Cool. So people can look forward to that. Watch the draft tomorrow on Sportsnet in Canada, and I think on NBCSN here in the States.
Yeah.
I know that you are rushing. You have important business to take care of on the phone that is not talking to me. Were you surprised that they actually dinged Roman Reigns for a wellness violation, considering he's the new face of the company?
This is the first I've heard of this, Mark. I don't follow it as closely as you do. This is the first that I've heard of it. But that, there's always been that. It's funny, even when I was following it closely, there was always that thought that, yeah, what happens if there's a quote-unquote wellness violation a week before WrestleMania and it's the main eventer? Would they still go through with it and put their main event in jeopardy? So maybe following that logic, I suppose I am.
Well, the funny thing is that he, of course, conveniently lost the title on Sunday.
Right.
And then Monday, this was announced. Although apparently I've heard, I don't know if Dave said it or I heard it somewhere else, but apparently they have now said that they will wrap up storylines involving a person before they actually suspend them. So he's got a 30-day suspension, which means he lost the title. He will be suspended for 30 days just in time for the next pay-per-view.
Ain't it convenient. That's
yeah.
Where that works.
Yeah, go figure. Well, I mean, it's a step up from the 80s when you had Downtown Bruno providing samples for main event stars so they could pass their tests, I guess.
Dude, you had Howard Finkel pitching for Hulk Hogan. Come on.
Cool. So, you are on your way to Buffalo. People can see you on the TV. You guys will have a pod sometime afterwards. Thanks again for this short notice, and we'll talk to everybody next time.
Thanks so much, Mark. Hey, let's do it a lot longer next time, pal.
No problem. Thanks. I appreciate it. Since we had a short interview, I just wanted to throw out some quick pop culture recommendations I've come across lately. The first is two things that I've been addicted to on Netflix. One is the 1970s horror/detective show Kolchak the Night Stalker, starring Darren McGavin as an investigative reporter who finds weird monsters where you would not expect them. If you were a fan of The X-Files, Creator Chris Carter has acknowledged that Kolchak is that show's spiritual predecessor. There was only a few episodes, so it will not take you long to binge through them. The other is The Art of Painting by Bob Ross, who some of you older folks may remember from watching on PBS. He's the guy with the big afro and the soft talking that talks about happy clouds and accidents and all that kind of thing. There are a bunch of episodes of his show on Netflix, and if you go to YouTube, there's a Bob Ross channel that has over 300 episodes of his show, spanning, I think, at least 16 seasons. I would encourage people who have never seen those to check them out, because they're a great mellowing out thing to watch when you're just chilling on your couch. In comics, DC has done Rebirth. We've talked about that on the last couple podcasts with people. I would certainly encourage people to read The Wonder Woman Rebirth by Greg Rucka, Liam Sharp, and Nicola Scott, and The Batman Rebirth by Tom King, who, as we have said in the past, is writing the great, great, soon-to-be-ending Vision miniseries at Marvel. Wrestling-wise, I got to go to an independent show in Pennsylvania a few weeks ago to see Kamitachi, who used to work in CMLL. CMLL, in the next couple weeks, has their International Grand Prix iPay-per-view, which has 8 CMLL stars versus 8 international stars, although they are cheating a little by having Marco Corleone represent Italy. That's on iPay-per-view on July 1st. There's also going to be the Barber Carbonario versus Rey Cometa hair match. So if you're around and have $15 to spare, I would certainly watch that. There's always plenty of CMLL that you can catch on YouTube, either on their channel or stuff posted by the Cubs fan. And as always, I would encourage people to check out the stuff that Black Terry Jr. has for sale from the Mexican indie scene. You can reach him on Twitter at Black Terry for his list of matches. Which is a short show. We have in the pipeline a bunch of people coming up in the world of comics to talk about their new books. And we also should have sometime in the next week or two my friend Justin, who has written for the magazine, talking about the just recently completed season of Game of Thrones. Thanks for your time. We hope you enjoy the show, and see you next time.